National Anthem longer.
Yeah.
That was like the game we were engaged in. And this went on for about almost 2 hours last night.
Man, he's got to, it's really got to be getting to him then.
It took a lot for me to not get up and say something to him.
What would you have said? You got a problem with
me, Derek?
I wanted
to say, no, not like anything like that. Just say, hey, Shelty, we haven't talked in a while. Why the frig did you bring Holderman into the game on Saturday
that
night?
That would have taken the temperature right down.
What were you doing?
That would have cooled.
Shelty, I hope you're enjoying
down.
This wine and
you have a nice glass
steak
of red?
And frites you're having right now, but can we please discuss this Holderman decision?
What was he having? A nice glass of red?
It was red.
Okay, good. That white wine would have been a tough one to stomach there. Not a white
but
wine.
But he tried staring a hole right through me, and I gave it right back.
Does he not know you're...
I was like Medusa trying to turn him to stone in that situation.
What is his end game if he's staring a hole through you? Like, he wants
you to come
trying
to say, like, hey, I'm on to you.
I think you're a real piece of garbage.
I don't know about that.
I think your opinions suck.
Maybe.
See, I would have a hard time not
I'm not coming on the air saying, you know what, guys? Derek Shelton doing a hell of a job as pirate skipper.
Who is saying that?
No one.
So why does he think like you deserve to be singled out there? I guess I'll take it as a flex that he knows exactly what you look like. Like, I could have been sitting in there and he wouldn't have paid me two minds because he doesn't even know who I am.
Well, I think he's disappointed because the times I've met him, this was when I still had a very favorable opinion of him. I was very cordial and very excited to talk to him and chat.
Did he hold your daughter?
He did, yeah.
But I mean, doesn't he understand that the duality of what you do is you, the normal person, are going to go out and be cordial?
I'd like to think so. I mean,
talking trash. Your job is to at times be very critical.
His wife worked in radio.
She works. Yeah, works in media.
In Cleveland, of all places, I believe. Anyways, let's talk to Greg Brown. He's at PNC Park. Hello, Greg.
What's up, guys?
Greg, do you think that would have been an appropriate question if I marched up to Shelty last night at the restaurant we were at and said, Derek, why the frig did you bring Holderman into the game on Saturday?
Well, I mean, I think if you asked it in the proper tone, I don't know that I'd have done that. I mean,
well,
you know,
I'm talking as a fan right now. That's what was going through my head happened.
Well, your question was, do I think, personally, it would have been appropriate that you walk up to the manager in a restaurant and say, why the frick did you... I would say no in answer to that specific question. That would not be appropriate.
Okay, but is it a fair question?
Oh, I think all that... You know, when you're a manager of a Major League Baseball team, you have to expect questions about the bullpen. So,
Greg,
you know, I think that's all fair game.
I mean, I think if you put me in that spot, I'm not guaranteeing we win the game because it's the Dodgers. I can promise you Holderman's not pitching in that situation. No way. Off the IL, he's been bad for me before he got hurt, and now it's a high-leverage situation. That's the guy I'm going to try to win this series? Absolutely not. I was flabbergasted by that. Still am, as you can tell.
Yeah, I can tell. You really are.
It sounds like you don't think it was a bad move. You seem very even-keeled on this.
No, I don't know the answer to it because I have not had a chance to actually ask him the reason why. I think actually somebody did. I thought I saw a quote, and there were a couple pitchers that were unavailable, I believe. So, you know, I go back to this, Andrew and Chris, all the time. It's hard as it is for many of us to believe, and I know you're not saying this, Andrew, but you have to believe that Derek Shelton wants to win every game. I mean, he wants to win as badly as anybody. There had to be a good reason for him to bring in Holderman, whether it was analytics that we're not aware of, whether it was the pitch, the arsenal that he had against those hitters. I mean, all of that stuff. I know we've talked about this before. I think all of this comes into play. And these guys all have their reasons. If it works out, you know, we don't say anything, and if it does, we're up in arms, and I get it. A lot of times we just don't know who's truly available at that time.
Well,
I will say
two guys came into the game after Holderman who were both better than Holderman, so we know those two guys were available, so they should have pitched before Holderman in that game. Case closed, as far as I'm concerned.
I guess some managers in tie games think that, you don't bring in your highest level guy. You wait for a closing situation. We've seen that over the years. So, It's the eighth inning. I don't have an answer.
It's the bottom of the eighth. It ain't the sixth. You got to bring a high leverage guy into that situation, not someone down the pecking order, I would think.
Well, I mean, but before, let's face it, last year, would you not agree that that's a situation where Holderman would have come in most times?
What point in the year are we talking about?
Oh, well, most of the year until, and I did scuffle for a stretch.
Scuffle?
Most of the
year.
That's
putting it lightly. That's like the most euphemistic way you can describe it. The guy basically blew up on the mound late in the season.
Would you not agree there was a stretch, a long stretch of games that he would have been used and you would have used him in that situation?
Sure. But I mean, okay. There was a long stretch of time where I would have wanted Grant Jackson and Kent Tekulve, and they haven't pitched in 50 years. I mean,
there's a stretch of games where you could. I mean, that's silly, but we could talk about like Bednar. People got upset; they kept using Bednar in save situations, and now he just brought him back. I mean, there is a time when you do have to bring these pitchers, these players into certain critical situations too, and I guess he just felt that it was the right time. He could answer it that way. Hey, I felt like it was the right time based on matchups, based on who was available. My guess is that's would be his answer had you politely gone up to him at some point, maybe not in a restaurant, but at some point walk up to, hey, just curious, what's the reasoning behind bringing that guy in?
Good afternoon, Greg. How are you?
Hey, Malzi, you're there.
I am. What are we seeing right now?
What did you think of all this, Malzi? Would you have stormed into a restaurant and
accosted Derek Shelton?
I would have only stormed over to his table and accosted him if he had been drinking a glass of white wine with steak and frites. Because he was drinking red wine, I think it was all above board. Let me ask you this. What do you think we are seeing right now through 1 month with O'Neal Cruz? Like, are we seeing a transformation strictly in terms of the offense? I know center field can still be an adventure, but do you think we're seeing like a real transformation into sort of a star level offensive player so far this year?
I mean, based on the last couple weeks, I'd say yes in all facets. I think that his jumps, his reads in center field have been better. I've been impressed with his ability now to lay back on, you know, I think he was kind of almost out of control for the first 3 weeks or so of the season when it comes to trying to get to balls that he can't get to and then just throwing it wildly somewhere. He seems much more under control defensively. And, yeah, I mean, he's become an absolute force at the plate. I've been really impressed with – I pointed this out on this last road trip. He, in Anaheim, the first game of that series against the Angels, he's leading off. The first pitch he puts in play and smokes it to the shortstop. It was an out, but he smoked it. The next night, he leads off. First pitch, hits it hard to the second baseman. The next day, second pitch of the game against a left-hander, Tyler Anderson, he crushes over the right field wall for a home run.
Yep.
The next day against Yamamoto on Friday, he has like an 8-pitch at bat and draws a walk. That really, really impressive how he has been selective when need to be, attacked when he thinks he should. I've been really, really impressed, especially this past week.
The strikeout to walk ratio so far for him is what's really impressive. He's got 16 walks, only 30 strikeouts on the year. Like that felt like to me, Greg, the one thing he needed to unlock was find a way to take more walks and cut the strikeouts a little bit. I don't think he's ever going to be a low strikeout guy by any stretch, but if he's walking 75 times a year, I feel like you've got a completely different player than what we've
100%,
seen.
100%. And you know, we started to see that. We started to see a little bit of that growth at the end of 2022. The last few weeks of 2022, he was not overmatched. He was kind of knowing what they were doing, how they were pitching to him, and was starting to cut back. And then, of course, he gets hurt in 23, and then 24, kind of similar. And we saw toward the back end of the summer, he started to take better at-bats. And, you know, when you have a full year of health under your belt, which he had last year, the first full year in the big leagues of health, that I'm sure goes a long way in leading to what we're seeing now in 2025 from him.
Pirates and Cubs, Bucco's 6 games in back of Chicago in the NL Central, trying to make up ground starting tonight, 3-game series. Greg Brown will be part of all the action. Greg, thank you for debating us and discussing things with us. We'll talk again next week.
Always enjoy it. Thanks, Andrew. Thanks, Malzie.
There you go. Greg Brown.
I enjoyed that back and forth. Sometimes the best advice I could give to aspiring radio hosts, if you're part of a two-man show, if your co-host has something good going with a guest, let it go. Let it breathe.
I also think it's different that he was sitting at a bar, at the bar, and not at a table. I wouldn't go up to somebody at a table who's there even.
It's kind of an effort to evilize somebody from a bar seat, in my opinion. Because usually I feel like the
bar seat was facing me.
I know, but it's weird because I feel like at most restaurants, the bar just seats face the bar.
Right. This was a circular bar kind of deal. Looking at me. And so.
Was he by himself?
No, he was there with somebody. Man, maybe like a fellow coach or something.
Maybe the coach was egging him on. Like,
but you should have seen my eyes. I was like.
Oh,
wow. I was like, you don't evil eye me.
Look at that. Wow, that's
it. I bet Shelty felt like he had the fear of God in him.
You know what I, when Pony says.
With Pony looking down the barrel.
Do you know what I'm thinking of is the scene in Little Giants when the nerdy kid's posing in front of the mirror with his shirt off and he's like.
Intimidation.
He's the skinniest kid in history. He's got his little bowl cut.
I was flexing up a little bit in that situation.
Oh, my God. What are you doing, the Ike Taylor where you put your fists under your biceps for the team picture to look more yoked?
Ooh, that's actually not a bad idea. I've never done that before.
Now, Ike, admitted that was his trick. If he was in the team picture, he'd have his arms crossed and his fists under his biceps so he looked jacked.
Fan Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Guys off the air saying, it's a good thing Derek Shelton didn't confront me because he would have kicked my ass, even though he's in his 50s and much smaller than me.
Producer Jermichael Finley, I have to tip my cap to him. The whole time you and Greg Brown were arguing, I just was trying to find a way to get in the famous Seinfeld clip. George's dad thinks that he's dead. George Steinbrenner is on camera telling him your son has passed away. And the first thing Frank Costanza can muster is, why the hell did you trade Jay Buhner? Buhner, hell of a player for those 90s Mariners teams.
Oh, yeah.
Him, Edgar Martinez, Tino Martinez, Griff. Can you name their catcher?
Dan Wilson.
Wow. Look at this guy, Don. Look at this monster.
This is a humble brag by you because you knew the answer to that without looking it up. So
I know,
you
but he's
are
like the only
on your
he's
own
the only random guy from that team that I actually know.
How about Joey Cora?
It did. That would have rung a bell.
All right. Steelers draft in the books. Ryan Wilson from CBSSports.com got us ready for the draft for months, and he did an excellent job, as he does every year with us, prepping us for the draft. So good, so articulate, so well-versed in all these draft prospects. So we had to bring him back to recap what the Steelers did in the draft. Ryan, I'm going to ask you to do the most rote thing, and that is grade the entire Steelers draft class. What would you give it?
I gave it a B. I had to do that for CBS Sports today, every single team. And I gave him a B, and I came around on him. I was trying to figure out what was going on after the first 2 days. Derek Harmon, he's going to be a good player. I had an early second-round grade on him, so that's right around the range. My concern was that I talked to a couple teams that had some injury concerns, and they thought he may fall. Mm-hmm. But I think he's exactly – my comp for him, by the way, was Keanu Benton. So he went in the second round, and if that's what you get, I get it, home run. Caleb Johnson, I had a third-round grade on him, and that's where he went. My concern with him is that he ran a 4.57. And he wasn't explosive, and he's a little upright. But here's the thing. Arthur Smith, outside zone, I'm sure you guys have had that conversation.
We've heard it,
Le'Veon Bell coming out ran slow, and he weighed about 20 pounds more than he did when he got to Pittsburgh, and the rest is history. So I can get behind that as well. And those two picks, I had some trepidation about what the direction was going to be. Love the Jack Sawyer pick. You tweeted this out, Pony. I was not a black fan throughout the draft process, and the Senior Bowl wasn't very good for him, but he fills a need. He was literally the 23rd defensive lineman drafted, and when you look at the guys drafted after him, J.J. McGee was on there. He came in for a 30 visit, but he's not an every down defensive lineman, so I get that. Love the Will Howard pick. Love the nod to Mark Bruner with the Carson Bruner pick. He's a really good football player, by the way. So I give it a B compared to all the other draft classes, and I think I'm coming around on it.
Ryan, when I try to grade these classes, I also try to get a sense, and I know it's hard to do that if in your shoes you're, doing 32 teams here, so the overall philosophy each team is trying to undertake year over year is probably tough to pin down, but I do like the fact, I gave them a B+, that there seems like there's at least a plan here, that next year is probably the quarterback year. And that it also feels like they're a little bit ahead of the curve trying to draft just bigger guys in general, because it feels like the NFL, and I want your take on this, do you think the NFL is slowly starting to move back to, we're going to line up a team full of big dudes instead of fast dudes, we're going to run the ball at your small defense that's trying to stop the pass, and we're just going to, you know, we're going to load up basically in the trenches that way, because that feels like what they're doing.
Yeah, and I think that's a good way to think about it. And I think part of the frustration for Steelers fans, and even me, was at pick 21, because I'd heard from a lot of folks that Shador would have been the guy there if Kenneth Grant were gone, and Kenneth Grant went 13. And when you take a step back, and I think your larger point's an important one, because in 2022, everyone and their brother felt at the time that they overdrafted Kenny Pickett, and that's what turned out to be the case. So I give them credit for standing firm, drafting from their board, and Kenny Pickett may have been the top 20 guy as far as they know a few years ago, and then getting a developmental player in Will Howard, who you know is going to be great in the locker room, who looks the part physically, and then trying to get through this season with whoever the quarterback ends up being, whether it's Aaron Rodgers or whoever else might be up for that job. And that's okay. We've seen this team win 8 or 9 games with everybody playing quarterback, good or bad. So I think it makes sense to build around the quarterback. So when you do get that quarterback, you're now in position to move forward. And I think that's a pretty good way to look at it.
Ryan, you said you love the Will Howard pick. Tell our listeners why.
I think he got the improvement he made over the course of the season. Forget it, coming from Kansas State. First half of the season, Ohio State fans were wondering why Kyle McCord wasn't still there. He was playing at a different level of Syracuse. And then the final 5 or 6 games, Will Howard was a huge part of their reason that team went as far as they did, won the national title. The Michigan game was a hiccup for everyone involved. And then the final month of the season throughout the playoffs, Will Howard played at a high level. I was at that pro day, 6'4", 236. He can run. He's physical. He has a big arm. He rarely gets hurt. And that's why Quinn Ewers lasted until the 7th round. That's why Shedeur Sanders went in the 5th round, because of the physical tools. He didn't look like Josh Allen getting off the bus. Will Howard looks like Josh Allen getting off the bus. Now, is he Josh Allen? No. But if you're getting this guy in the 6th round, I don't even think it's up for debate. I would have been okay with Kyle McCord, because I'm a Kyle McCord guy, but he also went in the 6th round a few picks before. And now you have a developmental guy with zero pressure on him, and he's not in the spotlight. He'll have an opportunity to perhaps learn from one of the best ever if Aaron Rodgers arrives. If not, he'll be battling for a job. I think it's best case scenario.
This is always the thing, though, that I try to stop myself. If I like, especially like a day 3 pick, Ryan, if I think, man, that seems like a really good pick, you know, I like X, Y, or Z about the player, I always try to ask then, why was he available? And so with a guy like Howard, who has that size and does have, not Allen's athletic ability, but he's a good athlete, so, you know, good arm, above average arm, why was he there at pick 185?
Because it took him until the final month of the season to figure out what an NFL quarterback looks like. And, you know, and that's the reality. And we could have this conversation about a lot of guys, including Tyler Shuck, by the way, who played literally 7 NFL seasons, started 1 year, and that was this last year. There's not a huge separation for me from Shuck and Will Howard, excuse me. I thought they both were probably late day 2, early day 3 guys. We'll find out together. But there just wasn't the consistency there. And, you know, if Kyle McCord had played above the line at all, he'd still would have been Ohio State, and maybe Will Howard would have been somewhere else. He never would have seen that. But sometimes the other thing about these guys being older is that you finally get to see them develop into who they are, because once you get to the NFL, we always talk about, well, they'll get coaching. They may, or they may not get practice reps at all, and then we just never figure it out. So that's a great – I mean, that's important to keep in mind. There's a reason these guys get drafted where they do get drafted. And sometimes we overvalue who they are, and I think there's an opportunity for Will Howard to prove people wrong, but the expectations are so exceedingly low, the 6th round it seems like great value.
What is the best explanation Ryan Wilson has heard for why Shedeur Sanders lasted until the 5th round?
I saw someone say this today, I can't remember who, and I apologize, but this encapsulates it perfectly, because I was sort of beating around the bush to get to this point. He treated the pre-draft process like he was on a recruiting visit and not on a job interview. And I talked to a couple teams that were blown away at the way the interview went, in terms of, not that it was it wasn't a great interview, but the approach he took to how he was going to, you know, go into that interview. And, you know, I would imagine this is what I said, if he had approached that interview, the pre-draft process, like Dylan Gabriel did, he would have been a top 10 pick. And you can argue about the physical, lack of physical traits all you want. Bryce Young went first overall. Bryce Young is incredibly smart. He said all the right things in the interview. We saw how he played on the field. You can't go into the interview process with a chip on your shoulder and not needing the folks you're talking to want to hire you, because that's not going to work typically at any level unless your dad owns the business. So So I think that's the biggest thing. And, I said this at the time, it's probably in his best interest to have this happen now as opposed to 2 or 3 years from now. And it feels like he's contrite and he said all the right things and hopefully he'll battle for the job. So we'll find out together. But that's what I heard in terms of why he lasted until pick 144.
What do you make of the sentiment that he really needed to hire an agent because he needed somebody in his camp who was going to shoot him straight about how he was viewed around the league, how he needed to approach the interview process? Because he seems like a smart guy who just maybe is around his dad telling him, like, you're good, you're going to be a top whatever pick, because he's talking to his buddies and not talking to actual decision makers.
Yeah, I don't even know if it's his dad that was, dad obviously pumped him up and like everyone does for their kids, but I think having an agent would have been a game changer. And I said at the time on day two, I said if he had a time machine, I would imagine he would go back and do it all over again and do it completely differently. And you need someone, and if you're hiring an agent, you want them to tell you straight. And a lot of times when you talk to agents, they're like, yeah, these kids don't want to hear that. But sometimes that's what they need to hear. And instead of finding out in real time, you're sort of prepared. I know that Dylan Gabriel had heard that he may not get drafted. I'm sure he was prepared for that. So it was a pleasant surprise. And he went to the bottom of the third round. Yeah. We can talk all we want about agents doing right or wrong by these kids, but you need someone to not be a yes person in your camp if that was the case, because clearly you went 134 picks later than probably you thought you were going to.
We've heard Brian Baldinger, Charles Davis, and Nick Saban, three guys who I respect a lot, compare Caleb Johnson to Najee Harris. Did you see that when you watched the Iowa running back on tape, Ryan?
I had Najee as a late first rounder, and like I said, I had Caleb as a mid-third rounder. He wasn't as explosive as Najee. He's more of a slasher, though. He's a one-cut-and-go guy. And look, the 4.57 at the end of the day doesn't matter when you're a running back. In the open field, he ran. No one caught him when he got in the open field. He just wasn't as sudden as some of the other running backs in this class. And that's okay. Arthur Smith isn't necessarily looking for, well, he is looking for Jahmyr Gibbs. We all are. But in the third round, he fits the scheme that Arthur wants to run. And I think that's going to be fine. And like I said, if you get 65% of Le'Veon Bell, this feels like a fantastic pick. But he is not going to be for everyone. Runs a little too upright at times, but, get your pads lower and knock guys down. And we saw that at Iowa. I wouldn't put him in the same conversation as Najee. I think we like to rewrite history. Same with Mac Jones, his teammate, once they get into the league and aren't quite as effective as perhaps we thought they were going to be.
Ryan, you know that this is a savvy fan base, a bunch of true draft sickos here, and that's why I say this to you now. We got a YouTube commenter watching us live on YouTube said, please ask Ryan about all the undrafted free agent signees. I'll ask you that.
Oh, my God. This guy is a sicko.
I'll ask you that by starting and with asking you to say what you can tell us about DJ Thomas Jones, who got this record non-quarterback UDFA $30,000 signing bonus.
I have not watched him, but I will. But I did watch Rock Taylor. I think he still one of the guys?
Memphis receiver, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, 6'1", 213, ran a 4.49, big target possession receiver who's a little stiff in and out of intermediate breaks. I also watched...
They got Sebastian Castro. Yes, yeah. The safety Iowa. From Iowa.
Yeah, let's see what I have for Castro real quick. This is real-time scouting here. Talk about linebackers running around blocks. This kid ain't running around anything. Consistently takes good angles to the ball coming downhill. Could he move to tight end? Question mark. My comp for him was Talanoa Hufanga, 5'11", 203.
Damn.
Ran a 4.59. He's 24 and a half. I don't care about any of that stuff. He feels like a middle-of-the-field thumper, so... there you go. Look at this.
Yeah, last one we'll do here, Ryan, is Mel Kiper obviously is in the crosshairs, but he went on Schefter's podcast and said, in his opinion right now, early favorite to be the top pick in next year's draft is Penn State's Drew Aller, because he thinks Arch Manning is going back to school. In your very, very, very preliminary homework on next year's draft, do you think right now Aller is going to be the best quarterback who comes out?
Physically, he checks all the boxes. I do think that Arch is going to go back to school from what I've heard as well. But I'm leaning towards Garrett Nussmeier. I had like a day two grade on him in the fall before he'd announced his coming back. Had a strong start to the season for LSU, and then he got a little careless with the football, trying to do too much. Coach's son, he can spin it, throws with anticipation. I need to see more of that from Drew because, again, he looks like Josh Allen getting off the bus. But if you're telling me that Drew Allen's a top 10 pick, in 12 months, I wouldn't push back too hard on that.
Very quickly, Ryan, Lenoris Sellers, is he just a tier below those guys, or do you think he's going back to school for one more year after next season?
We'll see about the going back to school part, but every SEC edge rusher I talked to at the combine asked him who was the toughest face. They said Lenoris Sellers. He's a little smaller, but they called him Baby Cam Newton, so I think he has a chance to be truly special.
Ryan, thank you so much. Check him out, CBSSports.com. You can also get his podcast on the Odyssey app. What's it called again, Ryan?
With the First Pick with Titans GM Rand Carthon.
Nice. I've listened to it, and I love it. Thank you, Ryan. Appreciate it, man.
Thank you, guys.
Ellie. And true fan travel for a once-in-a-lifetime adventure to Ireland that might include all of us when the Black and Gold play across the pond this fall. Five nights in Dublin that include tours of Guinness and Jameson, pregame tailgate party, game tickets, and more.
To be clear,
hotel and air or land-only packages are available. For more info on how you can take over Ireland with Crowley, go to 937thefan.com.
Need to be very clear here, Pony. It would only include all of us if a miracle happened, and it would be separate from the thing that would get you there with Crowley, which I feel like I need to make
Man, you guys
clear.
Are really pessimistic about life today.
No. I can't
you
imagine
guys are Debbie
why,
Downers.
I can't imagine why we would be pessimistic about this.
Remember that line in
hypothetical,
Home Alone,
Chris?
When he tells like Uncle Frank or whatever, stop being so pessimistic, and he says, I'll be realistic, you can be whatever. That's me right now. I'm not being pessimistic, I'm being realistic. And all the sausage.
I mean, you've
made.
Had great things happen. You played Oakmont a bunch. Donnie's getting married. Like, can't you be excited that?
Okay, that's zero.
Are any of these things? Are any of these things analogous to what you're describing here?
Yeah.
Donnie getting married, analogous to FanDuel probably taking you to Ireland.
I'm talking about like cool things happening in our lives, big things, exciting things. You're gonna play Oakmont. You're gonna get to play Oakmont again soon. You're going to cover the U.S. Open. These are things that have happened through the fan and going low. Donnie got to go to great restaurants and bars around Pittsburgh and eat wings and drink beer. That was pretty neat. I think we should bring that back. That was a hit.
Are we going to bring that back? What's the deal with...
I'm going to put that in the suggestion box and see if we can get somebody looking into it.
I'm not the guy to talk to there.
Well,
they know I'm on board.
There's a lot of looking into it that goes on. Just we look into things constantly here.
This is the Donnie Football Debrief, and it's brought to you by Saloni's Italian Bread Company, over 100 years of baking experience. Don?
The Debrief, April 29, 2025. An old friend in the AFC North again. A fake John and Robinson, first-class Hall of Famer.
Oh, God.
Deontay Johnson. Is now a member of the Cleveland Browns.
I do think, for the record, it took a while, but fake John finally decided to forsake him.
Do we know how much money he's making, what the deal is?
I thought it was like a couple million.
Because remember the Ravens' plan was to just pick him back up so they could get a comp pick for him?
Yeah.
Well, now they can't because Johnson signed after the draft. So that gambit didn't work for them. They're not going. That's not.
What
gonna
if the Browns did it solely to keep them from getting an extra pick?
Well, it's the date. So, like, maybe the Browns knew they could have signed him two weeks ago.
That's what I mean. And what if they just waited and that was the only reason?
Yeah, I would have if I were them. Why do something that helps the Browns, that helps the Ravens, helps one of your rivals?
What do you think that our friend Ken said about this this maneuver by the Browns? I'll read the quote.
Can I guess?
Sure.
Something about how they're tanking and he's embracing it?
I've got bigger things to worry about than some run-of-the-mill afterthought wide receiver who has problems with every team he's on. He'll show his ass, and he'll be out of here. The video of Ken saying this is even funnier because he looks like he's about to have a conniption.
I'm watching the same one.
He looks like a youth sports coach who looks like he's dressing the team down for not running the bases hard.
Well, that's
or
what I mean. The guys like Ken Carmen.
His head's moving around like a bobblehead.
Who have kids who are in youth football. Like, if you're trying to coach, 10-year-old boys to play football and,
do it the right way.
Deontay Johnson is public enemy number one, because he...
I'll tell you what, those kids...
He's anathema to, the kind of fundamentals and things you're trying to ingrain in these kids.
Those kids do innately what Deontay Johnson would do. They're running all over the place. They're zigzagging. They're going backwards for extra yardage.
Speaking of which, remember he held that camp and then he didn't show up?
Oh, yeah.
That was Johnson.
There was a huge issue with that.
He is turning into, in a bad way, the NFL wide receiver version of Josh Johnson, the quarterback, who's played for roughly half the league.
So he was Steelers. So he was Panthers. This is just last year. Panthers, Ravens Texans,
Yeah.
Ravens.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, I forgot the first Ravens, then back to the Texans. Then, yeah,
he never actually
yeah.
suited up for the Ravens the second time.
Yeah, that's right. That's why they did it, to get the comp. So he's only got the Bengals left for the AFC North quartet. And, man, given the people the Bengals have employed, it's an upset of staggering proportions that that's the one team he won't have.
Are there any guys that have played for all four AFC North teams? So Ogunjobi's come close. He doesn't have the Ravens, though.
Ooh, that's a hell of a question right off the jump to think about. Anthony Wright, the old Steelers quarterback, played for the Ravens briefly.
The Steelers and the Browns.
Oh, I said the old Steelers quarterback. So the Bengals are the team here, the odd team out.
Yep.
We got to start thinking about guys who played for the Bengals who might have migrated over.
Well, that's why Ogunjobi was a good guess.
Who's the kid, the safety, Geno Stone? He's out of four.
Never played for the Steelers, though.
I know. He's got time, though.
Vinny Testaverde was Browns, Ravens.
Any of those random receivers? I feel like here's going to be our answer if we have one. It's going to be your kind of reserve offensive or defensive lineman, some random-ass tight end no one's thought of in years, a Zach Gentry type of guy, for example. I would love to know. There's
got
to be somebody.
Okay, we got an answer.
Oh, hell yeah.
Apparently, AI is telling me that James Harrison is the answer because he was on the Browns practice squad. Are we going to count that?
I'm not counting that. Wait, did he ever actually suit up for the Ravens?
Yeah, I think he was on both practice squads.
Yeah,
I'm not counting that.
And he played for the Bengals.
Doesn't count.
Has to take an actual snap.
Let's double check that.
Doesn't count.
Here. Yeah, he never actually suited up for anybody but Pittsburgh, New England, and Cincinnati. Yeah, come on, AI. See, this is why we can't trust AI.
This is why it's a huge waste of money.
And didn't you say it's like wasting all kinds of water?
Yes, it wastes tons of resources, huge waste of money, has no use case. There's no actual proven thing that it does really well. I guess ChatGPT helps people who can't write well, write quickly, whatever. Helps people Photoshop Mike Tomlin with a Penguins quarter zip. You both have unleashed a monster and a beast with these Grok image things.
Yep. Good point, Malzi.
We should try to get Grok to make the PM team together in Ireland. So just like Grok will create an image that'll never happen, just like real
life. It's going to have two of us still in this studio and one guy there.
Yeah, us here, Pony with like a tin can.
How many teams did Gradkowski play for?
Browns and Bengals and Steelers. Played for Ravens.
His brother played for the Ravens, though.
So one family has covered the division. Anybody else? Like, there's got to be someone, man.
I don't think so.
Is it because, you know what I think is one of the hangups? Because there really are still rivalries here. I feel like there's more genuine hatred and bad blood in this division than most. I feel like it's hard for some guys to go Steelers to Ravens. I know Queen just did the opposite. I know Harrison did it, but like, I think it's tough for some of these guys to do this.
I think we've come up with a list of guys who have done three, but we can't get a fourth.
I think if anybody can pull it off, it's Deontay. How about like he signs a 1 week contract with the Bengals, takes one snap,
retires with them.
No, he's got to play.
He plays week 18, and that's all she wrote.
Let him go out there. There'll be a ball thrown to fumbled right next to his feet. He'll just kind of kick it and walk off.
You brought up Josh Johnson, right, Chris?
Yeah.
He's got Browns, Bengals, and Ravens. He's just missing
Steelers. Oh, now we're getting somewhere.
But he just signed with who? Washington?
Joe Thomas just told a story, I guess, on the Kelsey podcast about Josh Johnson having to come into a game against the Steelers where Thad Lewis got knocked out by Brett Kiesel. And to hear Thomas tell it, not one person on the offense, because Thad Lewis was already their third stringer, no one knew who Josh Johnson was. So Thomas in the huddle goes, "Hi, I'm Joe Thomas. I'm your left tackle." To like break the tension.
Isn't that kind of what Baker had to do in
the old some guy named Blake bit.
Yep. That was a Donnie Football Debrief.